Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to your second edition of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dirt Dog Podcast, Thursday Podcast. We haven't really settled on a name yet. Maybe we'll send that to a Twitter poll. But I'm joined by Randy Haynes again. What's going on, Randy?
Hey, man. What's up, Mike?
Not much. A lot of stuff going on. And on this week's episode, we're joined by Colin Weatherwax. Colin, thanks for showing up.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Really looking forward to hear your spin on things because it seems like you got a lot to say. Where can everybody find you guys on Twitter, starting with Randy, and what work you're doing?
At RTH222 on Twitter, and just getting ready to get through draft season here. We finally got some stuff to talk about. So,
and Colin?
At C_Dub, D-U-B, _92. And I actually have an article coming out on Friends with Fantasy Benefits on Tuesday. It's the all-sleeper team for this year's drafting. Getting ready for this hot stove to finally start cooking.
And it's definitely started cooking. You guys can follow me at Mike the Rotocop on Twitter. Let's jump right into it. And when I was preparing for the show, sending you guys stuff, I actually fell asleep pretty early last night. I hate to admit it, but I woke up to Eric Hosmer signing an 8-year deal in San Diego. And after the season he had last year, he had 318, 25 homers, 94 RBIs. His value really took a hit, and mostly in the sabermetric community. But San Diego's got a nice thing going. They got the great minor league system. They got a nice core there with Margot, Myers, and Hosmer. Randy, what did you think about the signing, and was this a good move for San Diego?
Yeah, they're trying to get things kickstarted out there. I didn't have a problem with the deal. There, you know, Hosmer's a hot topic, you know, whether it's a fantasy circle or, like you're saying, in the sabermetric community. I don't think it changes much for Hosmer, his value going into the season. If you were a pro Hosmer before this, you're still pro Hosmer. The parks are, they're still not as good. You know, Petco's not a hitter's park, neither is Kauffman Stadium. This lineup is probably going to be a little bit better than the one he was going to be playing in, especially with Kane gone, and it looks like they've given up on Moustakas bringing him back. So the lineup should give him a boost. If you were anti-Hosmer, this isn't going to sway you into drafting him any more than you were before. So it doesn't change much from a fantasy aspect, at least for me. I still have him as the 9th first baseman on my rankings.
Colin, do you agree that his value pretty much stays the same in San Diego?
Yeah, I do. I think it is a better ballpark than Kauffman Stadium. He did have a career-high 351 BABIP last year, and then also the career-high 318 average, like you said, Mike, so I don't see that sustaining. But batting behind Will Myers and should be in front of Hunter Renfroe, although Roster Resource doesn't even have Renfroe on the starting roster, which I don't understand. But batting in front of or right behind Myers, that should lead to, like you said, Randy, you know, the same type of production that he had in Kansas City. I do see less runs and less RBIs this year for Hosmer, though.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really thinks that Hosmer is going to match his last 2 years. I think there's definitely regression behind the numbers. But I do think San Diego made a good move here, building for the future, because even though they're not going to compete now, their minor league system is one of the best in baseball, like everybody knows about. So by the time Hosmer gets into year 3 or 4 and he has the option after year 5, they should be competing. So I think it was definitely a good move for San Diego. Another move that kind of shook things up and kind of started the stove, if you want to say, trying to put light to the fire of the stove. And it happened right after we got off the air last week, Randy. I think it was a day or two after Yu Darvish signed with Chicago. I just wanted to touch on that real quick, even though it seems like it's old news now. 6 years, 120 mil, 126 mil. What did this mean for Chicago? Kind of staying away from Arrieta, staying away from the other guys like Lance Lynn, and really going after it with Darvish here. What do you think, Colin?
I think it was telling that they strayed away from Arrieta. I mean, that tells me that they're really scared about, you know, him regressing. For Darvish, though, I do see the same outlook as he did if he would have signed with the Dodgers. It's still a great team. The wins should be just about the same, even though they're fluky. I'm actually a Rangers fan, so I got to see a lot of Yu Darvish whenever he was pitching with the Rangers. He does have some starts where you're just like, who is this guy? But I did look at Roster Resource today. They have Chris Jimenez as a backup catcher, and they have some familiarity with the Rangers system whenever he was in Texas. So in that rotation with Lester, Quintana, Hendricks, and then Chatwood and Montgomery as the 5th starter, they're looking poised to go back to the playoffs, and I still like him as a SP2 this year for fantasy.
What do you think, Randy?
Yeah, nothing really changed for me. Yeah, you like him staying in the National League. It's a, you know, there's still some weak lineups to pick on in that division. Yeah, he's a low-end SP1 for me. You know, there's the only really thing to worry about is he has only had that one season with 200 innings or more, but there's not many of those to come by now. So in this day and age in fantasy, you're pretty much happy with Darvish as your SP1.
Yeah, Colin, can you say that rotation again for me? I don't know if I heard correctly.
Darvish, Lester, Quintana, Hendricks, and then Chatwood is the fifth starter with maybe Montgomery instead of Chatwood. I just don't see Chatwood staying healthy enough, and Montgomery is just a better pitcher in my opinion.
I totally agree. I've been trying to start a free Mike Montgomery hashtag movement on Twitter, and I think Chatwood's going to end up being the fifth starter just because of the money they gave him. And I think they might actually move Montgomery because he doesn't seem like he's going to be happy if he's not starting. So I'm interested to see what happens with that. Another move that was made, and this was also yesterday in the midst of Tampa starting their fire sale, if you want to say that, they traded Jake Odorizzi to Minnesota. And this is a move that Minnesota needed to do because Santana got hurt, like me and Randy talked about last week's show. Santana was hurt, and now they're sitting there with Berrios and Gibson really as their only two lockdown starters out of the five. They signed Anibal Sanchez this week. I don't know if he's going to make the Major League roster or not, but at least adding Odorizzi in there gives them a little stability. What do you think about the trade to Minnesota for Odorizzi, Randy?
It's a worse park for him to pitch in, but it's a much better division considering outside of Cleveland, you've got three rebuilding teams and two of those three play in pitchers' parks. So you're not going to have to go up even with Baltimore and Toronto, who are lesser teams. They both have, you know, big time lineups and tough parks to pitch in. He's somebody that I've really kind of soured on over the last few years. A few weeks ago when Mike Warner and I did the Rays preview, we touched on how for three straight years, his xFIP, hard hit rate, and walk rate are all heading in the wrong direction, and his strikeout rate has basically been the same within 0.5% for three straight years. Going to Minnesota, pitching in a little bit of a better division, might put him back on my radar, but it's not doing it for me. I used to be big into Odorizzi, but I can't get behind it with what's happening these three straight years. But this move will at least put him back on my radar just a little bit.
Yeah, over the last couple of years, his peripherals definitely have taken a huge hit in almost every category. Colin, do you see yourself drafting Jake Odorizzi at all now that he's in Minnesota? Did you see it before the trade to Minnesota? Does he have any value to you?
The value stays the same, and I don't see myself drafting him this year. I agree with you, Randy, about his outlook this year. He did have the luckiest BABIP of his career last year at .227, and he also has given up 29 and 30 home runs in the past 2 years. So that's scary to me. He does have a better offense behind him than the one that's in Tampa Bay that just keeps deteriorating. So that might be good for wins. But as far as a fantasy pitcher this year, I just can't see myself drafting him unless it's in a draft and hold league. That's the only place where I can see myself drafting him this year.
Yeah, I'm staying far away from Odorizzi before the trade, after the trade. Really, his value didn't change much for me. I'd never really been an Odorizzi guy to begin with. Tampa also last night made a trade for CJ Cron, and in the midst of that trade, they designated Corey Dickerson for assignment. So there was a lot going on here, and what I took from this the most was that Malik Smith is going to get more at-bats, which I'm totally all for. There's actually a really funny Twitter account called Did Malik's Effect on Twitter, and every night if he steals a base or bunts or sacrifices, whatever he does, he'll say yes or no. It's actually a really funny account. Mm-hmm. So I want to know what you guys think about not only CJ Cron in Tampa, but Corey Dickerson being designated for free agent. What do you think, Colin?
Well, I agree with you 100% on Malik Smith. I was on him whenever he was in Atlanta, actually. And with more playing time for him, he's a great late draft pick for sleeper stolen bases, a little high average. So I definitely agree with you about Malik Smith. Now, moving back to Cron, I see it as him being the first baseman, but he's very injury prone. They have a couple people that they can move around. I think this means Jake Bowers might be coming up sooner rather than later. And then also they might be able to move Brad Miller over there. You just never know, but I just don't see why the Rays did it. I mean, they have Corey Dickerson, who was their best offensive player last year. And looking at their lineup, I mean, you have Kiermaier and Souza. I mean, I think Wilson Ramos has a great bounce back season this year, but they needed Corey Dickerson's left-handed bat in that lineup, and I just don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really understands it. Now they're saying that they might end up trading him, but Corey Dickerson, everybody knows, was an all-star. He didn't have the greatest second half, but he's not a guy you designate for assignment. Randy, what do you think about Cronin, Tampa, and Corey Dickerson?
Yeah, I didn't really understand getting Crone. Tampa's a team that platoons a lot, but Crone's, yeah, he hits righties better than his lefties. His WRC plus for his career is a 95, which is below average, especially for a righty facing a lefty. He doesn't walk a lot. His contact rate isn't good enough to overcome not walking, and he hits a lot of infield flies. I don't see this really working out at all. It doesn't make really any sense. And then you compound it with, like you said, DFAing Dickerson, who did really well last year for them, and he's gonna make somebody happy. There's plenty of places in the American League that could use a bat like that. So I'm not sure what Tampa's doing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, for sure. I saw a tweet last night that said Eric Hosmer, who has a 111 OPS plus for his career, got $144 million. Corey Dickerson, who has a 119 OPS plus for his career, got DFA'd, and they're the same age. I know Corey Dickerson had those years in Colorado, but still, it's pretty crazy that he got DFA'd. And now Tampa, after all the moves they made last night, comes out today, and they're saying they're going with a four-man rotation into mid-May, and when they need a fifth starter, they're going to use a relief pitcher when needed, Andrezi back to the bullpen, and everyone's wondering, where's Brent Honeywell? I don't know when I see him coming up, to be honest with you guys. I think they're going to try and preserve his service time as long as they can. That's just the way Tampa does things. Do you think Honeywell has any value this year, Colin, or you think maybe next year he'll affect more?
I think more next year, but I do think he has some value this year. It's very surprising that they're doing a four-man rotation where everyone in baseball is looking to go to six-man, five-man, longer DL stints, you know, the phantom DL stints as well. I think Matt Andrees is probably capable of that fifth starter, and then the other two that they have on there that I'm really worried about is Snell and Eovaldi. Eovaldi hasn't performed in a couple years, and then Snell, he had a great second half. I like him as a sleeper this year, but there's always that control issue with him, so I just don't see how they can pin him in as their number two or three starter and just feel comfortable, especially with him going every fourth or fifth day now instead of, you know, elongating his season out a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I was really looking forward to seeing Brent Honeywell pitch and maybe even make the team out of camp. It doesn't seem like that's going to happen now with everything that's coming out of Tampa. Does he have any value to you, Randy?
Yeah, you obviously have to keep him on your radar. This is just Tampa. They're going to, you know, it's an obvious move to, like you said, limit his service time as long as they can. And once he's up, I think he's got to be, if he's not already owned in all leagues, he needs to be added in all leagues. I'm in love with Honeywell from as a prospect. So it's just depressing, but we'll get him up in the second half, I'm sure.
Yeah, that seems like a realistic starting point for him in the second half. And maybe he'll help people win their fantasy leagues with a strong second half, because he really seems like he's the real deal and should do well as soon as he gets called up. Something we spoke on last week, Randy, was Sungmong Oh's signing in Texas. And I guess fault to us a little bit that we had such a long discussion about it before the deal became official. But it turned out he failed his physical and the deal with Texas fell through. So now, from what I'm hearing, Jeff Banister wants to go into the season with a closer. He doesn't want to do the whole Mickey Callaway, let me see who's a situational guy. He wants a closer, and it's between, from what I read, Diekman, Claudio, and Keela. And I think, like I said last week, Keela should be the closer. What do you guys think about that? What do you think, Randy?
Yeah, when we touched on it last week, Oh just kind of, you know, muddied the waters even more. Claudio was good last year, but we've talked about the elite skill set that Keela has. If I'm drafting right now, I'm more likely to take a chance on this bullpen than I was last week when we thought Oh was going to be there. I would take the stab on Keela just because of the skills. But I don't think we should sleep on Claudio just yet, because he is a decent enough pitcher, and having somebody like Jake Diekman doesn't take, you know, it allows them to take Claudio out of that left-handed relief, out of that left-handed specialist role.
Yeah, do you agree with Keela pick from Randy, Colin?
I love Keela this year, actually. I think Claudio might start off the year as the closer, but I think Keela definitely takes over, and he runs with it the rest of the year. Diekman, he was out last year, but the year before he had a great year. So I see him being the primary eighth inning guy, not even the lefty specialist. I see Claudio transitioning back into that that performance. So yeah, Keela, I'm taking a stab at him every chance I get late for saves league, and then saves and hold. I'm good with any of these three.
Yeah, I agree. The thing with Claudio, obviously, he doesn't strike guys out, but he could fit in that role well as a lefty specialist and get those ground ball outs, those double play outs that's needed in high leverage situations. But I'm all for Keela. I was last week. I still am this week. A guy that I'm not all for is Danny Salazar, who has reported shoulder discomfort in January, and he's experiencing a setback now. And his numbers are all over the place. He's great. He's not great. It depends on who you're talking to. Do you trust him, Colin? Will I trust him enough to draft him?
Absolutely not. I did not before this injury. I didn't understand why everyone was so high on him. I'm a big Mike Clevinger guy, so this is great news for me because I've stacked up on him all year. But I kind of wrote in my notes about Salazar ramble because I just don't understand it. I don't understand the hype. I do not believe in Danny Salazar. I don't think he can stay healthy, and that's obviously come to fruition with his shoulder injury. And being that he's going to be behind all the other pitchers for at least a month, I just don't see how he can make an impact this year, and I'm staying far away from him in drafts this year.
Especially, I'm a big Clevinger guy, too. I'm with Bauer there, who seems like he's going to take the next step. They definitely got a ton of arms, so any kind of setback is going to be huge for any pitcher in that rotation as far as falling back from the pack. Randy, do you trust Salazar, or you like us, me and Colin, who don't?
Yeah, I mean, listeners like it when there's a little back and forth and some disagreement, but this latest shoulder issue is example number, 904, why I can't stomach owning Danny Salazar. You see the strikeout rate of 33% last year, and you want to believe, you want to buy in, and there's always something with this guy that's erratic performance, injury. I can't do it. I'm okay if somebody else beats me with Danny Salazar at this point.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that you could live with hurting you because you don't want to take the risk of what could have been if he was his usual self, you know what I mean? So I want to talk about some other signings. I know there was a lot going on this week or this past couple of days. I just want to hit three guys here. I want you guys to tell me if it's a good sign or a bad sign, starting with you, Randy. Tony Watson, 3 years, $7 million is what was first reported with San Francisco. But that deal, I've seen 20 different things about the money value in that deal to stay under the luxury tax, over it, whatever it was. Whatever amount they signed Tony Watson for, do you think that's a good sign by San Francisco or a bad one?
Yeah, we've already seen with the moves that they make, they're trying to win this year. They're down to their last couple tries, and Watson's a good reliever. You actually had a good tweet the other day. It was a chart about his slider usage. So if he can get back to where he was a couple of years ago, where he's using the slider less and was getting better results, I do think that'll help him. And maybe that's something a team like San Francisco will work with. But it was a good signing. Speaking of the contract, there is a clause in there where if he eventually becomes the closer, there is an escalating bonus there. That's something that they're at least monitoring. Melanson had his issues last year, and this could be something where they're trying to cover themselves because they're trying to win this year. So it's something fantasy owners will need to keep an eye on. If Melanson struggles, Watson might be the guy that they would go to.
Yeah, it's just like when they were in Pittsburgh, Watson and Melanson. And it's weird that when you brought up the chart about the slider, his slider is actually good, and he doubled it up pretty much from like 8% to almost 16% from 2016 to 2017. The weird thing was that the rest of his pitches got worse. So my theory was maybe he was spending too much time trying to perfect that slider and sacrifice his other pitches in the meantime without necessarily knowing that. But I'm sure he'll tell you something different if we talk to Tony Watson about it. Colin, what do you think? Good sign or bad sign?
Yeah, it's a great sign from a San Francisco Giant perspective. He's an extreme ground ball pitcher, and in that park, it's perfect. As far as fantasy goes, I don't see myself drafting him. I know Melanson is a little, uneasy as the closer, but unless it's a saves and holds league, I'll put a flyer out on him, but I'm not too interested in him.
Yeah, I agree with you. Good sign, doesn't hold too much fantasy value. So two more guys I want to do the good sign, bad sign with. Jason Vargas signs 2 years, $16 million with the Mets. What do you think about this one, Randy?
I mean, no one likes Jason Vargas. As an Orioles fan, they were rumored to maybe be in on Vargas, and then after they signed Andrew Cashner, I was like, Jason Vargas doesn't sound too bad. But with what the Mets have going on with all their injuries, they're going to need somebody like that can go out there and eat innings. So he'll probably end up just being a streamer when he's at home against some weaker lineups. But I guess I'll lean yay. But it's Jason Vargas.
Yeah, I'm kind of in between like you are. In his first 17 starts last year, his ERA was a 2.6, and everything was great. And the second half, his ERA was a 6.3. So obviously. And not necessarily his health was in question, but his durability. And I don't know if he could really stay successful for a whole season. You think this was a good sign for the Mets or a bad sign, Colin?
I think it's okay. I think the Mets' plan for him is probably not to use him very much, because that means that all their starting rotation stays intact. But for that rotation, I see Vargas probably being a starter by April, just with all their injury issues. And, you know, if it's not Harvey, then it's Mats. If it's not them, then it might be Noah. You just never know with these Mets pitchers. So I think he has some value. I might throw a late flyer out on him in a draft and hold league, but in a redraft or, you know, a regular league this year, I'll probably won't even worry about him.
Yeah, it seems like it's only a matter of time before a Mets pitcher gets hurt. And I say that not even joking around at this point. A Mets pitcher will get hurt. So pretty much any signing.
By the end of the podcast, maybe.
Yeah. So pretty much any signing would be beneficial to them. And it doesn't really matter who it is at this point. Just somebody that could eat innings, because somebody will get hurt. One last guy I wanted to touch on was Eduardo Nunez going back to Boston. He had the first year is worth $4 million, and then he has a player option for a second year for $4 million. And I'm a big Nunez guy. I really like the way he plays the game, and his stolen bases will always give him fantasy value. Colin, you think this was a good sign or a bad sign?
I think it was a good signing for the Red Sox. I know he'll be at the top of that lineup. His stolen bases were actually really down whenever he was with the Red Sox last year, so that's a little bit concerning. But I do see him staying at second base this year with Pedroia coming back from his injury and another year older. I see Pedroia being like the Utley guy in the clubhouse and maybe playing once, maybe twice a week. But Nunez should take over second base. And if Pedroia comes out of nowhere and takes off where he left off, they'll find a spot for his bat. So he's definitely worth a middle-round pick for fantasy this year.
Yeah, I think this him going back to Boston was also very beneficial to his fantasy value, because he could have got lost on a number of teams as a backup. Randy, do you think this was a good sign for Boston or a bad sign?
Good signing for Boston, bad for Nunez, considering it was rumored that he wanted a 5-year deal when free agency started, and he fell well short of that, but I guess a guy can dream, right? He's going to get to play, obviously. He'll play for Pedroia until he gets back, and then even from there, there's always Hanley's always banged up. You know, you never know which Mitch Moreland you're going to get. He could find himself in a platoon maybe with Devers if he's starting to slump. So, you know, Nunez is going to get playing time one way or the other. He'll get his 20-ish or so steals, and he's going to have multi-position eligibility, which is going to help fantasy owners. I don't see him hitting .313 again. But if he's in that 270, 280 range like he's been a lot in his career, he'll be a nice little asset.
Yeah, he's a guy where as long as the stolen bases are there, he'll give you value. And I don't know if you guys are into betting. Are you guys into betting? Colin, you into betting?
A little bit.
A little bit? What about you, Randy?
Mostly fantasy.
Yeah, and I bet more than I should, to be honest, but that's another topic for another time.
I'm right there with you. So I got this Vertex promo here. If you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There's no risk, no sign-ups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You'll get a $50 rebate from Vertex. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. So, Randy, I know you might bet too much, but at least this will give you a couple bucks here, a couple free bucks to play with.
Yeah, I'll take it.
So, a couple who would you rather here, and it's just stuff that I've seen on Twitter recently, people either arguing or putting out their opinion on some guys here. And this was one I saw today. It was someone on Twitter who will remain nameless, I don't really like to say the person's name, said they would take Joey Gallo over Eric Hosmer in San Diego. How do you guys feel about that, starting with you, Colin?
I'm a big Gallo guy. I've been a Gallo guy ever since he was a prospect with the Rangers. He just provides so much power. He'll probably at least double up Hosmer's home runs this year. Most likely he'll beat him in runs and RBIs as well. The average is the scary part. So it depends on my roster construction. If I need that power bat late or in the middle rounds, I'll go with Gallo. But if I want to have a steady guy that can get me, you know, a 300 average, 15 home runs, and 80 and 80, then I'll go with Hosmer.
What about you, Randy?
Yeah, like Colin said, it's a roster construction thing. I do have Hosmer pretty solidly ahead of Gallo in my rankings, but if you build your team a certain way and can stomach the batting average and the ups and downs and the variance that comes along with a player like Gallo, then then you can definitely see where somebody can make the argument. But I'm going to take Hosmer over Gallo pretty comfortably.
Same, and I'm actually surprised you guys are even considering this. How could you take Joey Gallo over Eric Hosmer? Joey Gallo, I take Matt Olson over Joey Gallo. Do you guys agree with that?
I don't.
Really?
I got Gallo ahead of him.
I would take Gallo over Olson. I mean, I have Hosmer significantly ahead of Gallo in my rankings, but it's one of those arguments that you see pop up and you're like, well, that's ridiculous. But this one, I can at least see the argument. If you build your team a certain way, I can see wanting Gallo over Hosmer because you're having that power upside, and then you have somebody at first base that can get you, close to 20 steals, and that's a huge asset. But again, that batting average risk, you have to build your team a certain way, which is why I'm taking Hosmer over Gallo every time. But I can at least see how someone can make that argument.
See, I just can't. He had 209. His K percentage was 36.8. That's so ridiculous to me. I don't want anybody. I don't care if you hit 60 homers. You hit 209 and strike out 37% of the time. Shouldn't that be something you just automatically shy away from, Colin?
Well, he's the modern-day Chris Davis. I mean, we dealt with Chris Davis's ups and downs whenever he was breaking out, and he hit his 50 home run seasons, but he had a low average. Now, on the record, I do have Hosmer one ahead of Gallo in my rankings. Now, just for the upside for Gallo, if I'm in an OBP league, he's very valuable. I know it's not, a great OBP, but it's not going to kill you, and you're going to have those counting stats that are going to, put you ahead of a lot of other people. So I'll probably take Hosmer ahead of Gallo, but I mean, I love Gallo, so I might just be a homer and I'll just go for him.
Where do you have them ranked respectively between Hosmer and Gallo on your list, Colin?
I have them 14 and 15. So I have, I have Mancini ahead of them and then Desmond right after him.
What about you, Randy? You have your first baseman rankings?
Hosmer 9, and I have Gallo 18. Like I said, you're swinging for the fences with Gallo because he literally is swinging for the fences, and you're taking the chance on if he gets that, if he can get that batting average up to. Yeah, Chris Davis is actually a decent comp because the huge year he had in Baltimore, his batting average was way higher than, I don't have it in front of me, but I want to say it was in the 280 range, and he's never even come close to that. So if he gets one of those just locked in crazy seasons, you're talking about a fantasy MVP top 15 performer, where if Gallo can get a little, can get a little bit of luck and you're hoping that he improves, can cut down that K rate just a little bit, you can see where he could explode. But yeah, I have Hosmer, like I said, significantly ahead of Gallo in my rankings.
Yeah, but you just made my point for me, Randy. Gallo could be your fantasy MVP. Hosmer cannot. He'll be consistent every week, yes, but the best he can do is maybe what he did last year, and that's not going to win you a championship.
No, you're right. But again, it goes back to, it's about your roster construction. If you can stomach taking a chance on somebody like Gallo and you're going to pick him ahead of somebody like Hosmer where you know what he's going to give you, then that's then good for you. And if it works out, I'll tip my cap to you. But it's a huge risk to take, and it's got a lot of downside. You got your 40 homers, and he did chip in 7 steals last year. But like Mike said, the 209 batting average it hurts. You have to build your team a certain way so that 209 average doesn't sink you.
Well, if Joey Gallo hits 280, he's Aaron Judge.
Yeah.
Striking out 30-something% of the time, but Joey Gallo, I'll go to Vertex betting right now and put some money that Joey Gallo won't hit 280. So we'll see what happens with that. Some guys are high on him. Some guys like me obviously aren't. Some guys in the middle like you, Randy. So we'll see what happens with that. Another one I saw with the recent Darvish signing. Who would you guys rather have, starting with you, Colin, Carlos Carrasco or you, Darvish?
I'll go Carrasco for now. I could see myself putting you, Darvish, ahead of him. Right now I have Carrasco as pitcher number 7, and Darvish is 14. So there's this considerable gap between them. But I just think Carrasco, he had his mini breakout last year. Hopefully if he can just avoid the injury bug, then he'll be great in that Cleveland starting rotation.
What about you, Randy?
Yeah, I have Carrasco 8th and Darvish 9th in my ranking. So they're one spot ahead. The difference for me was kind of came down to Carrasco's division. He's going to have those three pretty much doormat lineups that he's going to be getting a lot. And Darvish will have a team like Pittsburgh that he can kind of mow over, but there's a few more potent lineups for him to deal with on a regular basis with Milwaukee and with St. Louis. So it's just, for me, it was just kind of, I had him really similar, and I went with what I think is going to be a, you know, the Indians are going to have a lot of wins because they're a good team anyway, but they could really pick on the rest of that division. And if Minnesota regresses at all, you could look at four of the, you know, six worst teams in the American League all in the same division. So,
yeah, I see the point you're making there. One thing on Carrasco, which I didn't realize until I was listening to Sleeper in the Bus with Justin, Paul Spar, and Nick Pollock made the point about Carrasco's fastball. I don't know if you guys listened to the episode, and I put a little chart up on Twitter about it. Carlos Carrasco's four-seam batting average against last year was .345. Imagine that. His secondary stuff was so good that it pretty much masked that. Imagine this guy, nobody hit his fastball at a .345 rate, which is pretty much unsustainable. He's in store for a great year if that regresses to the norm. Does that worry you guys at all that last year they hit .345 against his fastball, or no, Colin?
Well, I was listening to that podcast, and I think what Paul said is most of the Cleveland Indians starters, their starting staff, their fastball gets knocked around quite a bit. So I think, you know, Kluber has his amazing sinker, and then, you know, Clevinger has the same, you know, off-speed stuff that just gets people out. And Carrasco, I don't think he needs it. I'm sure he could control it, and maybe with the new pitching staff coming in this year, they might be able to tweak some stuff and make everybody even that much better. But yeah, that's why I have Carrasco at number 7. I mean, I just see nothing but green stars for him this year.
Yeah, what about you, Randy? Does that .345 batting average against his fastball worry you at all, or not even taken into consideration?
It's an interesting point, but again, you know, you mentioned Kluber. Kluber's a notorious kind of, you know, quote unquote bad fastball guy that is, you know, a top 3-4 pitcher in the game. And, you know, we're comparing him to Darvish, and on Darvish's pitch values on his fastball throughout his career have always been below league average outside of 2016. So just in this comparison, there's a lot of similarities between these two guys, and you're really just kind of flipping a coin. You're, you know, like you said, just taking one thing, like a division, and making that why you would have one over the other, at least for me.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of a flipping the coin thing. Another flipping the coin, what I think is flipping the coin, I know most people would take Bregman, but between Anthony Rendon and Alex Bregman, I think both of these guys are just going to be absolute stars. I think Rendon really is criminally underrated. I can't say that enough. Randy, who do you like between the two if you're sitting there and Rendon and Bregman are both available?
I have Rendon a couple of spots higher, but even, you know, in your early rounds, you're still kind of mixing and matching and trying to go roster construction. If you need a little more power, you're going to go Rendon. If you're looking for more speed, you'll obviously go Bregman, and Bregman then also has short and third eligibility in most formats, so that you have to take that into consideration there. Bregman, we kind of don't quite know what he is yet. He hasn't peaked, whereas Rendon's 27. That's not old by any means, but he's kind of who he is, you know, who he's going to be at this point in his career. So I have Rendon just by a couple of spots, but if somebody wanted to take Bregman over Rendon, I can't hate on him.
I agree, and I'm a big Rendon guy. His 13.9 walk percentage, 13.6 K percentage, that's almost 10 points less than the MLB average there. And his OBP was a .403. He had a great season last year. His ISO was .232. Colin, would you take Bregman or Rendon?
Right now I have Bregman ranked number 6 and Rendon at 8. But like you said, Mike, Rendon is criminally underrated. He's been doing this in and out for the past 3 or 4 years, and everyone just discounts it. They just forget about him whenever it comes to the draft. I think if you're, you know, deciding between the two, for me, Bregman's dual position eligibility kind of tips the cap his way. He has more speed, and he hasn't peaked yet. We've seen, you know, Rendon's consistent, you know, power seasons, RBIs, and the lineups are the same. They both have superstar lineups, so I got to go Bregman just to see if maybe I can catch him on his peak year and get those steals and the dual position eligibility.
Yeah, I don't think either guy will hurt you in pretty much any way. Another comparison I want to get to in the last one is between Justin Smoke and Ryan Zimmerman. Justin Smoke's just another one of those guys that didn't succeed on the Mariners and is now who he is now. Ryan Zimmerman's getting a little older. If you're sitting there and you need either a corner infielder or a first baseman, whatever it is, who are you taking, Colin, between Justin Smoke and Ryan Zimmerman?
Can I say neither?
You can. You can. Okay. Neither is a good answer, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Because Smoke, I mean, before he busted with the Mariners, he busted with the Rangers. I mean, he came up and he was supposed to be all that, and he never sufficed. And then last year, he shows us what he showed us, and I just can't believe it. I can't get behind it. And for Zimmermann, he stayed healthy. That's great. I love to see him whenever he's healthy. He's a dominant player whenever he can play those 150, 160 games a year. But I think that was probably the best season that he'll have moving forward. Right now I have them ranked 22 for Smoke and 24 for Zimmermann, respectively. But if I had to choose, I'm probably just going to pass on both of them. I have Santana right in front of him, Carlos Santana with the Phillies, and then Eric Thames in the middle. I don't feel comfortable with Thames, Smoke, or Zimmermann this year. So if I have to fill a position there, I'll probably look at third base and just get rid of these old, you know, one-time wonder guys.
Yeah, and I'll throw Thames into this for you, Randy. I mean, I'll take Zimmermann and Smoke before I take him. Out of those three, now with Thames in the mix, who do you like? Or you could rank them, I guess.
Yeah, I do have Thames the lowest of the three. I have Smoke and Zimmermann, you know, right next to each other in my rankings at 17 and 18. I would probably just take the chance on Smoke. Zimmermann has just been, you know, great for him to have that final good season last year. It looks like, you know, it might be towards the end of his career. But with all the injuries he's had, I'll just take the chance that maybe Smoke does it again. There is that pedigree there, like you guys touched on, you know, with him flopping in both Texas and Seattle. So maybe he's just, you know, the ultimate late bloomer, and we end up saying, oh, you know, Justin Smoke ended up being a hell of a player after you know, all those struggles and with Seattle and Texas. So I would just take the chance on Smoke, hope he repeats. But I don't believe in it, though. I do not believe he will repeat that 38 homer season. I think if you're drafting him and you get 25, you should probably be happy.
Yeah, both those guys really had great seasons last year. I don't think either of them will match those numbers, but there might be some viable options depending on the roster construction you come up with. So now, at this point in the show, I'm pretty much going to turn it over to you, Colin, because you seem like you have studied this labor draft more than me, and I'll speak for myself. I don't want to speak for Randy, but you could pretty much take over here and host, because I know you came up with some teams and some of the picks from the best teams, and you're going to ask us who we like, which team we like better, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, definitely. So I watched the labor draft kind of unfold. I think it was sometime last week, Thursday or Friday. That's what I do on Thursday or Friday nights, just so everyone knows. So I saw it streaming on Twitter. I was like, oh, let me take a look at this. So the first thing that stood out to me was Scott Pianowski with Yahoo. His first 11 rounds in this format was all hitters. And his first pitcher that he took in round 12 was Andrew Miller. And so I said, you know, oh, well, he's going to own full RP. But then he took, like, Julio Teheran, and he took a couple of those low-end starters. And I think in this format, with all the experts that are out there, that was very risky. I know his offense turned out to be very good. And then Randy, I don't know if you saw that, but I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, first 11 rounds of hitters. What you think about that?
Yeah, I did follow it a little bit. It's an interesting strategy. I think the only way that Scott is going to have a chance to win this league is to make a couple of trades, which they can do in labor. So he does have that going for him. It's an extreme strategy. I've considered messing around with that in a 15 team, trying to take, you know, a hitter for the first five or six rounds and then trying to piece together a staff. But he really took it to the extreme. It's always something different. Somebody's going to do it, and if he can pull off some trades, he might actually end up having the best squad.
Yeah, and then Mike, did you have the same comments for that, for the first 11 rounds being hitters? And just so you know, it's Mookie Betts, Rizzo, Rendon, and then Scope. Those were his first four rounds.
Yeah, I got it up here, and I personally love all four of those guys. I think all four of those guys are awesome. Then he goes Bogarts, who I'm not so hot on. Carpenter, who I like, obviously, peripheral-wise, but if he has the same year he had last year, it's not really going to help him much. Same with Adam Jones, and I like Realmuto, but now I'm looking at his pitching staff. Like you said, after the first 10, you get to Andrew Miller at 11, Julio Teheran, Kevin Gausman, Josh Hader, who I like, Brad Ziegler, who I don't like. I don't know if anybody really likes Brad Ziegler. And he got Jake Odorizzi and a couple other guys. I don't hate the strategy, but I just wish he or if I was him, I think I would have went with a couple different guys as far as the pitchers went. I think there was some value that I'm looking around the draft board here seeing that he could have got better pitchers, or at least what I thought was a better pitcher than the ones he landed. But I'm not against the strategy by any means. If you're going to stack up on hitters, you really stack up on them. And he did that because he's very balanced between Betts at the top and then guys like Didi Gregorius and Michael Taylor at the bottom. So I think he's got a good team hitting-wise, but the pitching, I just would have selected a couple different guys here or there.
Yeah, definitely. And for me, Scope and Bogarts, I don't understand. I know Scope had his great year last year, kind of broke out, but I don't see it happening again. And if I were him, I would have taken maybe Robbie Ray instead of Scope in that round, and then maybe Aaron Nola on the way back, or Chris Archer, one of those two, just to kind of balance out the team. But, you know, like you said, Randy, he kind of just went full on for those hitters, and I can't fault him. So the next guy was Jake Seeley. He's the one that won Labor last year. He kind of went with the all-risk team, in my opinion, for his first three rounds. He went Stanton, Judge, and Thor. So I wanted to hear you guys' take on those three guys being the first three picks in your 15-team draft, starting off with Randy.
Yeah, and even his fourth pick was AJ Pollock, again, who's got, you know, got all the talent in the world, but he can't stay healthy. So yeah, there was a lot of risk there. I personally can't do it, but good for Jake to be able to take those kinds of risks. To have Stanton and Judge as your first two picks, that's you're making a statement there. So it could go either way. He's got, you know, we hear it a lot now, the typical first or last place team, and I think that's kind of what he's assembled, at least with his first few picks. He did add a little bit of stability as the draft went on. A guy like a DJ LeMahieu, Gio Gonzalez, even Cespedes, as long as his hamstrings are no longer made of glass, then Cespedes might be a good value pick there. But he's definitely got a boomer bust team.
Yeah, definitely. And then Mike, so he went Stanton, Judge, Thor, and then I'm looking at the rest of it. He actually balanced out his team with the average with Daniel Murphy, Randy, like you said, DJ LeMahieu, maybe a bounce back candidate in Cespedes, and then the ultimate risk is Shohei Ohtani in round six. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm trying to put together the number here to see what overall pick he got Ohtani at, but I'm not going to lie, I don't hate the Ohtani pick where it was, seeing who's around him right now. Maybe I would have went with Luis Castillo maybe before Ohtani. I see he was picked a couple picks after, but I'm pretty comfortable with Ohtani pick there. The problem I have is the risk between Stanton, Judge, Syndergaard, Pollock, and then to add Ohtani. Like you were saying, that's really my issue. If you're going to get those guys at the top, I really wouldn't risk getting a guy like Ohtani there. Maybe go for someone else a little bit more established. But the bottom of his team is really not too bad. I kind of like the way it balances out. Also, he had a great pick in the third to last round, round 27. Malik Smith's going to turn out to be a great pick. Michael Kopech, whenever he gets called up, he's going to end up being a great pick. He got kind of screwed with Ervin Santana, but he's got Blake Parker, a couple other guys. I don't love the team, but I don't hate it as much as I thought I would after seeing those first four picks.
All right, yeah, definitely. And this is the guy that won the league, so we can't really question him from being sideliners, but it's definitely risky, definitely risky. So the last two teams that I wanted to kind of talk about was Todd Zola's team. He kind of went with this big four, and I want to see how y'all liked it. It's Charlie Blackmon, J.D. Martinez, depending on where he goes, Dozier, and then for his ace, he went with Verlander in the fourth round, which I thought was a steal, and then getting Segura in that fifth round to kind of give him some more steals with Blackmon. Kind of take a look at his team, and Mike, what'd you think about those first four picks?
I love the first four picks. I absolutely love the first three. The first three are phenomenal to me. Maybe I would have took another guy instead of Verlander, but that's besides the point. I mean, you can't really lose with that pick in Verlander there. But I'm up to round 14, 15 here, and this guy's team's absolutely insane. I don't know. I haven't really compared it to the other teams, but between Blackmon, Martinez, Dozier, Verlander, Segura, Shaw, Castillo, I love Rosario. I love Castillo. I love Margot. I really love Zach Godley. I love Trey Mancini. Wellington Castillo is going to be good. Sonny Gray. This is an awesome team. I don't know if you feel the same way, but right off the paper here, it's jumping out on me like he has one of the best teams here.
Yeah, definitely. I think he has a second-best team. Let's get your comments real quick about this team, Randy, and then we'll get to the number one team, in my opinion.
Yeah, Zola did a
he did a great job. I kind of agree with Mike a little bit. I would have probably taken DeGrom over Verlander, but if you're going to take Verlander as your ace, he backs it. You know, you get that stability. He backed it up with some high upside guys like a Castillo, a Godley. Even if you go a little further down with Chase Anderson, so it's a really there's a lot of good balance up and down his roster. He did an exceptional job.
All right, yeah, definitely. And then the last team that we have here is the Sporer Collette team. And then we had a running joke on the Labor hashtag that Justin Mason kind of took over this draft for them. But they started off real strong. They started off with Kluber, then KB, Chris Bryant in the second round, added some stability with Jose Abreu, and then Jacob DeGrom in the fourth round. So their first four picks, they got two aces and two all-around great bats. If you want to scroll over their team, they had the 14th overall, and just looking up and down this lineup, they got Kane right after DeGrom, Chapman to give him some saves, and then Desmond in hand as well, and then just keep going down and keep going down, and it just keeps getting better and better. So, Randy, what do you think about their team?
Yeah, what they did is kind of why I really like being at the back end of the first round this year, is with you're still getting essentially a first-round bat in Chris Bryant, and you're able to tap one of those first four aces when you're in that 13, 14, 15th range, like what they did. So they did it right. Abreu is a great grab there in the third round, and they did a good job grabbing some speed later. They got a couple high-end relievers that are going to help stabilize the ratios, and then roll the dice on a couple guys at the end. Bundy was more in the middle, but then even like somebody like a Chad Kuhl, I like him a little bit this year in 15-team mix. He's still got a little bit of upside in there, so I think they did great, and I'm sure that that Justin had the most to do with it of anybody. So at least that's what we'll say here.
Yeah, definitely. We'll say that here. And then they ended the draft with like Matt Adams in Washington now. And, you know, based on our previous conversation about Zimmerman, he could, you know, find himself into 500 at bats. And with him at 500 at bats with your fourth to last pick, that's just great. And then I have Kluber ranked as my fourth starting pitcher. I have DeGrom as my fifth. So them getting in the first and the fourth round, that's just crazy to me. What do you think about it, Mike?
Yeah, I think it's an awesome, awesome grab there to get DeGrom in the fourth round and pair him with Kluber. And I'm looking at the team as a whole here. They definitely balanced it out very well and definitely got some good picks. Austin Barnes maybe won't get as much playing time as they originally thought on draft day, now that it came out, I think it was today, that Grandal is going to be the primary catcher. But other than that, I really, really like the way they constructed this roster. You said Matt Adams might even hold some value late there. Between him and Zola is really what's sticking out to me. And I love the way Alan Harrison started off his draft, those top four, with Sale, Votto, Ozuna, Ray. But after that, it kind of gets a little shoddy when I think he drafted Miguel Cabrera a little too high there. Same thing, I don't want any shares of Trevor Story. But just looking at this screen in front of me, it seems that Sporer and Zola, you're right about that, do have the best two teams.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, taken out of the 14th pick there, that's where I want to be, and especially in a deep draft like this. That way I can get two studs right off the bat. And then even if you look at the more another risky one for Dr. Roto, at number 15, he took Correa and then Gary Sanchez right after that. And everyone in the draft room was saying, you know, that's way too early for him, but he wanted to lock down that position. So, and then going back to Sporer and Collette, they got Gattis and Barnes as their catchers. And I know, you know, they're kind of risky, but they're very high upside. So getting a high upside guy at that position, let alone two, that can kind of make and break your season. So that's kind of the Labor overview for, you know, all the pros. We're out here, the amateurs, trying to degrade their draft, but you know, we kind of all look up to them, and they all did a great job.
Yeah, they really did, and maybe one of us, hopefully one of you guys, will be in that league a couple of years from now, and just don't forget about the little guy like me hosting this Thursday night podcast that's yet to be named, you know? So that pretty much wraps everything up. I thought this was great. Colin, you did a great job. Randy, same to you as always. Just let them know where they can follow you on Twitter one more time and whatever you got coming out that you want to promote. Randy, we'll start with you.
On Twitter at RTH222, and got a couple ideas in the works as draft season rolls along here. Nothing concrete yet, so I don't have anything to plug just right now. But yeah, at RTH222 on Twitter.
And Colin?
I'm at C_Dub, D-U-B _92. And I do have a piece coming out on friendswithbenefits.com coming out on Tuesday, and it's the all-sleeper team. So what I did is I went to NFBC ADP, so I looked at the average draft position for there, and I did a 11-player lineup, two pitchers, two relief pitchers, and then one at every position, and two outfielders of just guys that are going way late that I wanted to jump on this year for fantasy. A couple guys that we talked about today, Wilson Ramos, definitely is one of the high-end catchers that I'm looking at.
Yeah, and I'm definitely looking forward to reading that. You guys can follow me at Mike the Rotocop, see my podcasts for fantasyassembly.com, and also my stuff for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. And hopefully this trio will be back in a couple days. It seems like a good idea, yeah, Colin?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, thanks for having me, and look to be back.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get together in a couple days and do this again. The stove seems like it's pretty hot right now, so hopefully we'll have some more news for Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Signing off. Thanks, guys.